Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Nun Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. Before we begin today's shiur, just a brief reminder that we highly recommend, in anticipation of starting Maseches Erevin in just a couple of dapim, to get a hold of the book of illustrations, the book entitled Pirush Chai on Maseches Erevin, authored by Rav Chaim Porush. We are going to continue today's shiur at the top line of Daf Kuf Nun Dalid. In our previous shiur, we started a discussion concerning one who violates Mechamer Achar Behemto B'Shabbos, the leading of an animal with a burden on it, on Shabbos. We saw a couple, our markings indicating that there will be a couple of versions in presenting this case, this issue. At the top line, you can see we have a Roman numeral number 2. So we are, in effect, today's shiur is simply a continuation of that which we started at the end of our previous shiur. So to get full benefit of today's opening discussion, we recommend listening to the end of the previous shiur. So we continue at the top line. Rav Zvid Masni Hochi. Rav Zvid presents Rami Bar Chama in the following fashion. Omar Rami Bar Chama. Hamachamer Achar Behemo B'Shabbos. One who is guilty of leading his animal with a burden on it on Shabbos, b'shogeg eino chayav chatos, b'mezid chayav skila. So in this second lashon, you notice the difference that if done unwittingly, so there will not be a sin offering obligation. Unlike all other cases of Shabbos malacha violations, where when done b'shogeg there is a chiyuv chatos, in the case of mechamer, not so. But at the same time, there is a skila penalty if one violates mechamer b'mezid. This, with respect to this point, this is the same as the previous lashon number, Roman numeral number 1. As we saw last time in our markings, the triangles with the point facing up represent Rami Bar Chama, and with the inverted triangle, that introduces Rava, who objects. And as we continue in the Gemara, we read Masiv Rava. This is a long question, as our marking indicates on the side of the Gemara text. Masiv Rava, Hamachalal Es HaShabbos, B'Dover Shechayoven Al Shigigosu Chatos, Chayovin al zdono skila. This is a Tanaic source, a brisa, that declares, that tells us that one who violates Shabbos in something that, if done b'shogig, would be chayav chatos, so if done b'mezid, it would be chayav skila. Ha, we would infer, ein chayovim al shigosu chatos, if something that would not bear a chatos offering, if done b'shogeg, then ein chayovin al zdono skila. Then there will be no skila penalty if done b'mezid. Notice the use of the markings. We've dashed underline this in this previous line, the word ein. So if there's no ein chatos, then ein skila. It has to be balanced. What did Rami Bar Chama say? He said that you can have a case of shogeg, no, eino. We have a dashed underline there on the second line from the top at the end of line. There's no chatos, but there is skila. So Rava is challenging Rami Bar Chama from that which is implied by this Tanaic source. Rami Bar Chama will answer, and this answer takes a couple of lines, as the long answer marking indicates, to the side of the Gemara text. Mikotoni ha ein chayovin phule. It is true we have a source that's in the frame, But that which you, Rava, are inferring from the source is not something that is stated explicitly, so that the source can stand on its own, but don't learn it with the implication as you attempted. You notice that we squiggle underline the word ha. The reason for this is that two lines above, at the end of the line, you notice the word ha. That was squiggle underline. That was Rava's interpretation of the source, namely the inference that he, Rava, drew from that source. Rami Bar Chama is responding and saying, don't draw that inference. Rather, hochi ka'omar. And here we have a framed section which represents Rami Bar Chama's rereading of the source that Rava had originally introduced. So let's read it. Dovo shechayohum al shigos chatos, a type of offense that would result in a chatos, a sin offering, when done bishogeg, chayovim al zdono skila. If violated knowingly, there would be a skila penalty. V'yesh davar, there is something, she'ein chayovim al shigigoso chatos, v'chayovim al zdono skila, that even though there's no chatos when done b'shogeg, there is nevertheless the stoning penalty, the skila penalty, when done b'mezin u'mayinihu. And what is that? Mechamer. That's mechamer, as Rami Bar Chama claimed. Rava Achva de Rav Mori Bar Rochel, Rava the brother of Rav Mori, we skip this parentheses section as per the instructions of the Bach, and continue, Havimasni law, Laha Shmaitse, Mishmei de Rav Yochanan Liftor. It means Rava was taught over this topic in the name of Reb Yochanan, in the direction of Ptur, of exemption. And that will become clear instantly. Omar Rebbe Yochanan. Notice we have a Roman numeral number 3. This is the third version, or the third presentation of Mechamer Achabemta B'Shabbos, B'Shogeg, and B'Mezid. And in this section, you'll notice that we have used a double underline to highlight key expressions. We have Bishogeg and Bemezid, and later Belav. Omar, so as we said, this version has the issue of Mechamer being taught in the name of Rabbi Yochanan Liftor, in the direction of exemption. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mechamer Achar Behemto B'Shabbos. Also, note that this is a long point, and that's the nun that you see to the side of the Gemara text, indicating in the Kuda, a long point which lasts till the third line from the top of Omid Beis. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, HaMechamer Achar Behemto B'Shabbos, Potter Mi Klum. One who violates this activity of Mechamer on Shabbos, he is totally exempt. And totally exempt means from all punishments and obligations. B'shogeg lo mechayev chatos. If he were to have done it unwittingly, not aware that it's Shabbos, or not aware that it is a problem, he will not be obligated to bring a sin offering. Why not? The huksha kol haTorah kulo l'avodah zarah. This point is something that we saw in our previous shiur on Daf Kuf Nun Gimel, where we learned from avodah zarah, which serves as the source for this information for the chiyuv chatos and the chiyuv eskila. And what we learned over there is that just like avodah zarah is something that entails obligations and punishments, it is something violated only when you do it begufe, you yourself do it, not an action done through a behema. So, since we learn from avodah zarah, and mechamer is not something that you personally do, therefore there is not going to be a chiyuv chatos. B'mezid nami lo mechayev, and likewise, if someone violates mechamer b'mezid, he won't be guilty of skila. D'snan, mechalas a Shabbos, Dover Shechayovim al Shidoso Chatos Chayovim al Zdono Skila. The source from Masechet Sanhedrin says that one who violates Shabbos in something that has a Chiyuv Chatos would then have a Chiyuv Skila, and that would lead to inferring Ha. However, if it's something that doesn't have a chiyuv chatos to it, well, like we just said by Machamer, because we learned the dinim of chatos from Avodah Zorah, so ein chayovim al zdono skila, there will be no skila either. So you notice so far the 2 points: violation of Machamer b'shogeg, violation of Machamer b'mezid. In both cases, ptur, exemption. Ben lav nami lo mechayev. The term lav is a reference to the violation of a negative command, where the Torah warns against doing something. For example, the Torah warns, do not eat pig meat, do not eat ham. If a person would eat ham, he would be chayev malchus. The Torah says, do not plow with a muzzled ox. And if you plow with a muzzled ox, so you are chayev malchus. That's an example of a lav. What if someone is mechamer b'Shabbos? So our Gemara here, this is telling us that if one violates mechamer b'Shabbos, he is not in violation of a lav, which means he would not get lashes. Why will he not get lashes, which is malkos, which is the penalty for a lav violation? Dehave le lav shenitan lazoras misas basin. Because the realm of Shabbos is considered a negative command. As far as Shabbos is concerned, the Torah says, lo yisasek ha-molocha. Lo is a negative command. Do not do molochas on Shabbos. So since the realm of Shabbos is something that has as part of its punishment possibilities a chiyuv misas beisdin, that's what this term means. Azhoras misas beisdin means it's a negative command that has a potential for misas beisdin. There is a rule that now follows from this. The chol lav shenita nazoras misas beisdin. Any lav that in its realm there is a possibility of misas beisdin, ein loikin alav. There will be no malkos. There will be no lashing. Now, since Shabbos is a realm that has a potential for Misas Beisdin, therefore, the idea of giving Malkos, of giving lashings for any Shabbos violation is simply out of the question. There are lashings are not given for lavim that have a potential of Misas Basin. Now we have to be very, very careful. If we're not saying that Mechamer has a potential for Misas Basin, we already explained that as far as the Mezid is concerned, Mechamer is ruled out. That since there's no Chatos for the Shogig, there can't be any Skila for the Mezid. However, the realm of Shabbos, with regard to all its other Melachas, does carry with it a death penalty, the skila penalty. So it is a lav shenita lazoras basis, misas beisdin. And as a result, the rule says that any realm that has an association with misas beisdin, so there is no malkos. Continuing at the top of Omid Beis, v'afilu lemando marlokin, there is a dissenting opinion in Maseches Makis that will tell you that a lav shenita lazoras misas beisdin could have malkos given for its violation. He will concede that in the case of Mechamer b'Shabbos there will be no malkos. And how would we conclude that? Lichtoiv rachmona lo yisase kol melocha uvehemtecha. Let the Torah write, don't do. Now the word ta'aseh is a command, it's a second person, it's a form of grammar in the second person, meaning you. Lo ta'aseh kol melacha, you do not do melachas, uvehemtecha, and your animals. The pasuk, however, says lo sa'aseh kol melacha ata uvincha uvitecha, etc. and so forth. So what do you need the word ata, which means you? Why does it spell out the second person form? Ata lomali. Why is that said in the Torah? It seems to be unnecessary. So the Gemara explains, Hu nihu de mechayev. it's telling me that he would be chayav, the Misas Beis Din for Shabbos, Misas Beis Din, and the potential for Malkos. However, behemto lo mechayav, the word atal is an extra expression that essentially excludes behemoth, meaning that if behemoth does a malacha, so there will be no, there will not be considered a lav, meaning it's not a complete lav with a malchus penalty. So this is the end of that particular long point, and as we see, Rabbi Yochanan says that one who is mechamer achar behemto b'Shabbos is exempt on all levels, whether it's a shogeg level violation, a mazig level violation. And as far as Malkos is concerned, there wouldn't even be Malkos. In other words, if someone had been warned against Bechamber Mishabbos with the warning that if you do this, you will get lashing, you will get lashings, that will not happen. We continue on the third line from the top with a quote from the Mishnah. Higia lechotzer achitzona. We describe a person with his animal and a burden on it. And he eventually arrives at the first courtyard of the of a city that affords protection for his goods. The Mishnah then said at that point, so the load on the animal is released. And the Mishnah had said on Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, those vessels on the animal's back that one is allowed to move on Shabbos, we can take them off directly, and those vessels or packages that one cannot move on Shabbos, so he unties the ropes that were holding the packages on the animal's back, and the sacks fall off on their own. On the side of our Gemara, we have the Nosei, the topic heading, Prikas Mitanim Shel Mukze Me'al Gabi Behemos B'Shabbos, the undoing of packages of loads from the back of an animal, that these loads that contain Mukze. The Gemara, Omar Rav Huna, Hoysa Behemto Tuna Klei Zchuchis, an animal that was laden with glass vessels. Mevi Korum Uksosos, Umeiniach tachteha, he shall bring pillows and mattresses, place them under the animal, under the packages, umatir hachavolim, and he then undoes the ropes, vahasakin noflim, and the sacks containing the glass vessels will fall. Rashi adds, very importantly, Teuna Klei Zechuchis. Rav Huna described an animal that was laden with Klei Zechuchis. Now, these Klei Zechuchis are vessels that are not moved. You don't move them on Shabbos. As Rashi says, She'ein Nitlin B'yodo La'nichon L'arzer, something that he cannot move directly by his hand to place them on the ground. The Gemara asks, "Why is that? What clay zechuchis, standard glass vessels, are something that you can move?" And we have triangles highlighting questions that are directed against Rav Huna. And we had under Rav Huna two numbers, one and two. This question, the questions that we have are directed against each one of the points. So, on regarding point number two, he said, you undo the ropes, v'hol anan tnan, but we learned in our Mishnah, noitel es hakelim hanitlin b'Shabbos, that one can directly take off the vessels by hand, those kind of vessels that one can move on Shabbos, and you would assume that glass vessels are vessels that you can move on Shabbos. Why does Rav Huna, under point number two, say, umatir hachavolim, you simply undo the ropes? The Gemara explains, ki koma Rav Huna, Rav Huna's din of undoing the ropes and not moving the vessels directly, bekarni du'umno d'lo chazio lei. These are glass vessels. They happen to be karne du'umno. These are, umno is a blood letter, a blood letter's horns. It's a type of, we'll say, a glass tubing that a bloodletter uses to extract the blood from the patient. And being that they are bloody, they are disgusting. So, as such, lo chaziole, they're not fit for him. They're not fit for any Shabbos use. Therefore, you can't move them directly. They are muktza. The Gemara asks, well, if that be the case, the pillows that you place underneath will then have these bloody tubes on them, and you won't be able to move the pillows anymore. And there is a concept that the Gemara calls mevatel kli mehechano, which means canceling or abandoning a vessel from its general use, voiding the vessel from further movement. Rashi says, "V'ha'ka mevatel kli mehechano kore muksosos." These pillows that are placed underneath, kishemanichon tachas dovor she'ein nital, when they are placed under something that itself cannot be moved, so mevatlon mehechano yishuv lo yitlon misham. The pillows then become useless. You won't move them further anymore. V'domi lesoser. It's like the malacha of soser of. Destroying. In other words, you're destroying, you're being mavatel, the vessel, you're disengaging the vessel from any further use. The Gemara answers, Bishlifi Zutri. Rashi says, Masuois Ktanim, these packages that fall on the pillows are actually small packages, Sheshomet Hakar Mitachtem, Venoflim Alkar Hasheni, Vechein Ad Shemagian Loretz. What he will be able to do is, since the packages are small, so he'll place another, let's say, smaller pillow next to the first one onto which they landed, roll the package off the pillow by slipping the pillow out from underneath it. The package will then roll onto a second smaller pillow, lower pillow, and he'll continue doing this till the package ends up rolling right onto the ground, so that he hasn't caused a Shabbos disengagement of any of the pillows, being that this is the case. They're small, the Shlifi Zutri, they're small packages, and this, let's say, slipping out from under action is an option. Question, Meisvei. This question is directed at point one that Rav Huna made. The following source, Hoysa Behemto Teuno Tevel Vashoshios, an animal that was laden with Tevel. Tevel is untithed produce. Ashoshios are like lanterns. Matir is a chavolim. He undoes the ropes. Vasakin Noflin. The Afalpi Shem Mishtabrim. He unties the ropes, the sacks fall, even though they break. Now, it's quite obvious then that he hasn't placed any pillows. Now, what did Rav Huna say in point number one? He said that you can place pillows underneath. In this source, there's no pillows placed underneath. So, and the source says that you don't place the pillows, and the things are going to break. The Gemara answers, Hosam Bekulsa. Rashi explains Bekulsa. Chatichos Rechovos Shozchuchis. She'enom Kalim. Ve'usim Mehem Chaloinois. The reference here to the Ashoshios was not like we thought, some type of glass lantern, but rather they're large, wide pieces of glass that are not vessels. And from these sheets of glass, they make windows. Rashi continues, V'kevon delekop seida b'shmirason, since there is no loss in their breaking, the sofa lechotech chatichas katanas, because these large sheets of glass anyway are going to be cut down into small pieces. Therefore, they're in their breaking as they fall, they're basically going to break into smaller size pieces than anyway he would cut down to size. Therefore, lo sholo vikor muniach tachtem, the rabbis did not allow for the bringing of pillows to place underneath them. In other words, there's practically no need in this case for pillows. There's no pseudo, there's no loss in the breaking. The Gemara continues, deiko nami, dekotoni dumyo de tevel. The proof that we're talking about kusa is that the glass referred to in the source by the word ashoshios is taught in the context of the tevel. Ma tevel de lo chazi le, just like the tevel, untithed produce is something that is of no value to you on Shabbos. It is muktzah. It hasn't been tithed. You can't eat from it. Afochanami, so too with regard to the glass vessel, the glass reference, lo chazile. They are not vessels. They're rather these sheets of glass. And likewise, they are lo chazile. They are not fit for you regarding Shabbos use. The Gemara asks, umay afalpi she mishtabrin. Why is there any reference then made in the source dealing with the fact that stating even though they break? Breakage indicates some kind of loss, and even though it's going to break, that sounds like there's a loss, but the way you're describing it this as kulsa, there's no loss. The Gemara says there is a very, very minor loss. Mahu detemo lehefsid muat nami choshishu. You might have thought that for a minor loss, the rabbis concern themselves with it, choshishu, and would allow the placing of pillows. Chomash molon, the source teaches us, no. Now, what's the minor loss? We didn't explain that yet. And it's as follows. If you had large sheets of glass that you were cutting down to a small window size, so you would be able to benefit from all of the glass, cutting it down into sections, each subsection, that would be useful. In the event that it breaks, in the cases described above, falling off the animal, so there will be some fragments, glass fragments, that shatter that will not be useful. But those glass fragments represent a fraction of the larger quantity of glass, hence falling into the category of something that's insignificant, or as the Gemara terms it, hefsid muat. And as far as preserving or saving from a minor loss by having the pillows placed there, that we do not allow. Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Hoisa behemto tuna shlif shel tvua. If one's animal was laden with a package of untithed grains, maniach rosho tachteo, and the issue, of course, is the unloading of such an animal. So you place your head underneath it, umesalkoi litzad acher v'hu nofel me'elov, and you maneuver yourself in such a way that you push it over to the other side and it falls off on its own. Chamor shel Rabban Gamliel hoist tuna dvash v'lo rotzel leforka ad mosoi Shabbos. The donkey owned by Rabban Gamliel was laden with honey and he did not want to unload it on Shabbos. And rather he wanted to wait till Motsoi Shabbos. And you know what? The Motsoi Shabbos Mesa. When Motsoi Shabbos came around, the animal died. The Gemara asks, why did Rabbi Gamliel hesitate to begin with regarding the removal of the honey? Honey is something that is allowed to be used on Shabbos. It's no worse than vessels that are nitlin that you can take off directly on Shabbos. The Gemara answers, kishehidvish. The honey went sour. We're talking about sour honey. We have a very short bracketed section. If you skip for a moment, the Gemara asks another question. V'yatir chavolim v'yiplu sakin. Why didn't he simply untie the ropes and let the sacks fall off? And it says in the source that he didn't want to unload the donkey whatsoever. Okay, we'll get back to that in a minute. In the brackets, the Gemara makes reference to the sour honey. We describe Rabban Gamliel's donkey as having carried on its back soured honey. It indicates that, okay, granted, you're not going to eat from the honey, but it's something you nevertheless want to preserve. Otherwise, you wouldn't have your animal hauling it around. So, hidvish, lamai chazi, in the brackets, the Gemara asks, regarding sour honey, what value does it possibly have that Rav Gamliel would bother transporting it in the first place? Answer, l'ksisa de gamli. Ksisa is a sore that develops on camels. A remedy for the sore is the use of this sour honey. So it has a medicinal value to it. So in that sense, he wanted to preserve it. The Gemara asks, we'll go back to the story. The honey was obviously contained in some type of receptacles that were on the back of the animal. They must have been tied to the animal's back. V'yatir chavolim v'yiplu sakin. Why didn't he simply untie the ropes and let the sacks full of honey receptacles fall groundwards? Answer, mitzteru ziki. The ziki are the flasks. They would have cracked. Question, v'yavi korem uksasus v'yaniach tachteyem. Why didn't he bring pillows and mattresses and place them underneath? Answer, mitanfi v'komavata kli mehechono. He was afraid that if they fall onto the pillows, we're talking about something that would spill and ruin the pillows, and he would then not move them around the rest of the day. And that is the problem we alluded to before. It's called mevatel kli meichono. You're disengaging the vessel from its original purpose. Question, v'yikotzar b'alechayim. Is there not a problem of the animal suffering? And there's the assumption right now is that the animal, the suffering of the animal, standing there all of Shabbos with a burden on its back, is a Torah-level violation. You're not allowed to subject your animal to pain on a Torah level. And as the Rashi says, let the Torah consideration of Tzar B'Chaim come along and overrule the problem of bitul kli mehechono. In other words, bring the pillows, place them underneath, and if they get soiled with the honey or whatever, and you won't move the pillows anymore, so what? It's more important to concern yourself with Tzar Bali Chaim. So why didn't that govern Rabban Gamliel's decision making? The Gemara answers, Kosova Rabban Gamliel was of the opinion, Tzar Bali Chaim de Rabbanon, that the prohibition of animal suffering is a rabbinic level concern, and as such, it doesn't have the strength to overrule, to supersede the prohibition of Mevatel Kli Mehechono. As we continue in the Gemara, we want to glance at the side under our No Say heading. We also have an indicator that this goes till Ad Omid Beis, so it's a rather long discussion. And we've noted, Osur Lishtamish Bebali Chayim Ube Eitzim. The Gemara will concern itself with the prohibition of using animals, like resting on animals, leaning on animals on Shabbos, and same thing with regard to trees. We will discuss tzadim, the sides of those elements, and tzidei tzadim. That's literally the side of the side. But if you can imagine, for the time being, a couple of scenarios. One scenario would be the isur lishtamish be'etzim. One would not be allowed to lean on a tree on Shabbos. That's the use of the tree directly. Imagine there would be a beam that's attached to a tree. That would be the tzadin. So you would not be allowed to lean on the beam that's attached to the tree. Let us say you had something attached to a tree, and then something in turn attached to that item that was attached to the tree. That's, as you can see, it's a type of third generation vis-a-vis the tree. That's called tzidei tzadim. We'll see more examples of these things in the Gemara, and it will make it more realistic and tangible. So we now continue in the Gemara. Abaye Ashkechei Lei L'Rabba. Abaye met Rabba, found Rabba. The Komishav Shef Lei L'Brei Agaba De Chamra. Rabba was playing with his child, and Mishafshe means he was rubbing the child on the side, agavo, literally on the back of a chamor. Amarle, so Abaye asks, Komishtamish mor babale chayim, are you not violating this ruling of using animals on Shabbos? The Rashi makes reference to the Mishnah in Maseches Beitzah that says you're not allowed to ride on the back of animals, and same thing with regard to all other forms of use. So Omar Le, Rabba responds, Tzadin hein, Tzadin lo gozru behu rabbonon. I'm not mishtamish bali chayim. That prohibition of mishtamish bali chayim is an isur of using the animal proper. As we said, riding on the top of an animal. I am simply rubbing my kid on the side of the animal. I'm not having the child ride on the animal, just rubbing him on its side. That's not the normal use of an animal, and regarding that, the Rabbanan did not impose any gzeirah. The Gemara asks, Mina Temra, from where do we know to say that? Tisnan, the Mishnah, our Mishnah taught, Matir hachavolim v'asak yinoflim, you undo the ropes and the sacks fall groundwards. My lav, bechover gavalki, or bechever gavalki, tahavu luhu tzadin. It's a type of attachment. Chever is like from the word chibur, something that's attached. Gavalki is a form of attachment where in order to undo it, you have to lean up against the side of the animal and maneuver things so that this chever gavalki gets loosened and the packages fall off. As we will continue in the Gemara, the next two lines describe different forms of package attachment to animals. Truth be told, illustrations would be very beneficial. Rashi takes pains to explain verbally the different forms of attachment. We are going to try to lighten the burden, so to speak. I hope you enjoy the little play on words, and simply focus on the principle. Regarding the Chever Gavalki, we have highlighted in the Rashi, you might notice on the third wide line under the Gemara, a diamond, and there we've written, or there we've used the diamond, Vitzorich, Lesalkun Yachad, Velikrov, Eitzel HaChamor, Meshavshish Atzmo, Venishan Gufo, Betzire Chamor, in order to loosen the Chever Gavalki type attachment of packages that are attached to, the two packages attached with straps to the animal on either side of the animal. In order to undo this, you have to lean up against the animal and free the straps from the packages. But the main point is undoing of the packages, as the Mishnah suggests, involves the Tzadin, and it says you can do that. It means you can lean up against the animal's side in order to manipulate the straps to remove the package. The Gemara, let's just read that line again. My lav bechever gavalki, the havaluhut tzadin. It's an example of tzadin. In order to release the chever gavalki, you have to lean up on against the side of the animal directly. Utzadin lo gazu behu rabbanan. And from the Mishnah's permission, allowance of package release, that shows us that tzadin is something the rabbanan did not rule against. The Gemara rejects this. Loi. The Mishnah is not describing Chever Gavalki, but rather, answer one, Bechever Aglivki, the Loi Havutstodin, Inami Beliksa, or possibly a Liksa type attachment. Without getting into the vivid details for which, as we said, illustrations will be very beneficial, Rashi is quite elaborate in his explanation. Let's focus on the principle. With regard to these two answers, the Chever Aglivki and the Liksa, there is no need for any pressure apply to the side of the animal, no leaning up against the animal. All that needs to be done is a type of peg is removed, and because of the way these packages are attached with straps, etc., the peg removal or the minor jiggling of an attachment device will cause the release of the packages. And that's what the Mishnah was allowing. But it was not allowing, it wasn't necessarily allowing, tzdadim. So at this point in the Gemara, Rabba would have lost his proof. And now the Gemara goes a step further. Eisvei, the Gemara will actually now be asking a direct question on Rabba. The source comes from Maseches Sukkah and a sukkah construction. A sukkah needs to be made of a minimum of, we'll say, three walls. Technically speaking, two walls and a post measuring a tefach would be sufficient. But for illustration purposes, we'll talk about a sukkah that has three walls. Two of the three walls in the upcoming case are freestanding. The third wall is attached to a tree, we'll say. As the sugya unfolds, the Gemara itself will release more and more detail. But for our purposes, we have to play along with the Gemara, and it's in many Gemaras you have this, where in order to develop a question, we are not going to focus on the details because it's in the details that we find the response. But for our purposes, we have to understand that a sukkah, in this case, has two freestanding walls, and the third is attached to a tree. And the schach of a sukkah, the schach, was laid upon the walls. People, upon entering their sukkahs, they would place things, items, packages, whatever, on the schach for temporary storage purposes, and then take stuff off the schach. In other words, the schach was part of the use of the schach was part of the, we'll call it, the sukkah experience. This point is brought out in the Rashi. It's a central point for understanding the Gemara. You'll notice a little less than halfway down the wide lines of Rashi in our Shas Ozer that appears on your screen. We've dashed underlined in the middle of the line, Mepneshes Sukhacha Kashur Bedoifneha. The schach of the sukkah is attached to the walls. The nishan olah, and it rests on the walls. V'hu mishtamish al schacha, v'noisin kelov. A person uses the schach surface. He puts vessels on the schach surface. Again, he puts them there probably temporarily, because in general one cannot sit under a schach that has vessels on it. But there's a temporary use of the schach. V'nimtzo mishtamish be'ilon kol knisa de sukkah, being that the walls, in this case you have one of the walls leaning up against a tree, and the schach is resting on the walls, so in effect he's using the sides of the tree that are in his service. It's called mishtamish bilon, and in the model we just illustrated, it's a type of tzidei ilon. Now let's see the Gemara. We try to give a certain amount of background. Now the Gemara itself. Eisvei, shtayim bidei adam, v'achas be'ilon. Two walls, bidei adam means, are made by man, they're freestanding, and a third wall, be'ilon, is attached to a tree. Kshera, the sukkah itself is an acceptable sukkah, it has its minimum of three sides, the ein oilin lo b'yomtov. And you're not allowed to use such a sukkah. Oilin literally means is to ascend, but it means you can't use such a sukkah on Yom Tov proper. It's a good sukkah for Chol HaMoed use, but not for Yom Tov day use. My lav, the chok bei be'ilon, is it not a case where he chok is to hollow out a little part of the tree and used that to attach a wall to that part of the tree? Tahavu luhu stodin. So this setup now is such that the schach that rests on the walls, you have a problem of the use of the tzdodim of an ilon, utzdodim asurin. This source says that you cannot use the sukkah on Yom Tov. Is it not because of this problem that you're benefiting from the tzdodim of the ilon, and that is against Rabbah? And we've dashed underline at Stodim Asurim and wrote above it the low Karabah. Rabbah had tried to justify his playing with his kid along the side of the animal based on the idea of Stodim in claiming that Stodim lo gazru b'rabbanan, and here you see to the contrary. The Gemara says loy, the model that we just described, namely the Chok Baby Elon, where he had hollowed out a little spot on the tree and inserted there the walls that attaching the walls to the tree, is not the case, but rather the kafya le'ilon the onach sikuch iluya the kamishtamesh bo'ilon. The case here is that he bent over, kafya le'ilon, he bent over branches of a tree in such a way that the branches bent over and tied into place formed the third wall, so that the tree itself, it's not a case of a board attached to a tree, but rather the tree itself is the wall, and then he placed the schach on the tree, so that his use of the schach, as we described before, is placing the vessels on the schach. The schach is leaning directly on the tree branches. And that is a more serious problem. That's what the Gemara says, the komishtamish ba'ilon, he's using the tree itself. The Gemara asks, ihachi, if that's the case, in other words, we should just point out that by saying komishtamish filon, that is a defense for Rabbah. If you're trying to keep track of the back and forth nature of this Gemara, so by saying that he bent over the branches, which then formed the tree, the wall itself, that is the problem, and that is the defense for Rabbah. In other words, it's not a case of tzdodim; it's a case of direct use of tree. And that's something that's prohibited on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Gemara asks, Ihochi, if that's the case, Amar Seifa, continue reading the Tanaic source concerning the sukkah and its walls. It says, Shalosh bidei adam v'achas bi'ilon k'shera v'oilin lo b'yom tov. If you have a sukkah that is made of four walls, you don't need to have four walls, but it is. It's three are made by man, there are three we'll call freestanding walls, and a fourth wall that is the tree. So it's kosher, and you can use it on Yom Tov. So now the Gemara asks, if it's as you described in defending Rabbah's position that the tree referred to in the wall construction is the actual tree itself, why should you be allowed to enter such a sukkah on Yom Tov? You still got the problem of the schach that's leaning on the tree, and you're using the schach for holding your kalim in the meantime. That should still be a reason not to use such a sukkah. So the fact that this Tanaic source says Oilun lo b'yom tov, it's probably not a case of kafya le'ilon, but rather it's like we said before, it's the case of tzdodim, where he attached a wall to a tree. Well, And by saying that, then you're then going to go back to the first part of this source, which says Ein Olum Lo B'Yom Tov, and then argue against the Rabbah, showing you that Stodim are Osir. Well, all that having been said, the Gemara now asks on that, but we have to note structurally, up till this point, in the rejection of Kafia Le'ilon, don't forget, Kafia Le'ilon was Rabbah's response to save himself. But now in rejecting Kafia Le'ilon, so we're reinstating a problem for, or a problem against Rabbah. The Gemara says, okay, let's play along with this and see where that leads us. V'yelomai, tzadim asurim. So you want to conclude against Rabbah that tzadim are asurim? Well then, sof, amai olin lo b'yomtov. Then why, in the Seifa case, where you have the three walls b'day adam, does it say you're allowed to enter it on yomtov? So, at this point then, the attempt of the Gemara to reject Rabbah on the grounds of Tzadim Asurim doesn't hold water, because we're then left with a problem with regard to the Seifa. So we can simply say that the attack on Rabbah is really not effective. Elohasam, rather, we're going to have to explain the Mishnah, these Tanaic sources quoted from Sukkah, the two walls and the three walls, Bidei Adam. What was the tree doing there? Elohasam begavzo parsachno de'ilon gufei doifen bi'almahu de'shavya. The Rashi explains in detail what the gavzo parsachno is. For our purposes, it means that you had a case of a very branchy type tree, and the branches were coming out from the sides of the tree in such a way that the branches formed the tree wall. But the main point here is that the schach was not placed on the tree whatsoever. So being that the schach was not resting on the tree whatsoever, so there is no problem when you've got three freestanding walls, and it's on them alone you have the schach resting, because when you've got three freestanding walls, you don't need the fourth wall to place the schach on it. Therefore, the Seifa says, Olin lo b'yom tov. So at this point then in the Gemara, we can say that the attempt to question Rabbah from the sources involving the walls of the Sukkah, that method of attacking his Shita doesn't hold up. Daiko Nami, and by careful reading of the source in Sukkah, you can see that this is the case, where it was a case of this Gavzo Parsachno arrangement. Dikotoni, Ze Haklal, Kol She'ilu Yinotel Ho'ilon, V'yachoylo Lamoid, any case that if you were to remove the tree, the Sukkah would be able to stand. Ulin lo b'yomtov. You can enter such a sukkah on Yom Tov. Shema Amino. This is a clear proof that the Gavzo Parsachno was in fact the case of the Seifa. Again, just to repeat ourselves, the case there was three walls that were established by a person. The fourth wall was the tree. The schach was not leaning on that fourth wall, the tree wall, and hence this cloud, this rule, makes perfect sense. Because in your mind's eye, you could have removed that fourth tree wall, and the sukkah would have continued standing perfectly with its schach, being that the schach was not placed on that tree-oriented fourth wall. And since the tree, in your mind's eye, could have been removed from the scene, that kind of sukkah one can enter on Yom Tov. And again, we must emphasize that in that case, the schach was not leaning on the tree whatsoever. Leimo Kitanoi, Here, the Gemara attempts to set up the issue of tzdodin, in other words, rabos din, as a machloikis tanoim. So the source is rather terse, and it's actually quite vague, but we have to understand it in the context of the sukkah. And it says, Ein oilin lo b'yom tov, Reb Shimon ben Lazar omer, mishum Rabbi Meir, oilin lo b'yom tov. My laugh, the whole kumifligi. We have a Tanakhama that says you can't enter the sukkah on Yom Tov, and in the name of Rabbi Meir, it says you are allowed to enter the sukkah. Now, what are they arguing about? So, my laugh, the whole kumifligi. The more sovar, stodim asurim. The Tanakhama would be of the opinion that stodim are asur. Umar sovar, mutorin, and Rabbi Meir would be of the opinion that it is allowed. We take a look at the Rashi, and the Rashi fills in the essential information. Four lines from the bottom. My laf, behol kumiflugi, ukegoin dechok be'ilon. This source is like the case we saw much earlier. It was at the point that the Gemara raised its initial attack on Rabbah, that he had fastened a wall by hollowing out a little spot on a tree and attaching a wall to that hollowed spot. The best thing for us to do would be to read the Rashi directly. My lav b'halkum b'fligi ukegon dechok b'ilon. He carved out a spot on the tree. Umoisiv konim b'tzdodin. The konim that we saw earlier was a reference to these are beams or posts that serve as walls. So he attached konim to that carved out part of the tree. The sikeh aleihem, and then he placed schach over the konim, the havilei mishtamish bitstodim, which is an example of then the use of the sides of the tree, kishim mishtamshin alidei schacha, when you use the schach for supporting the vessels that we described earlier, di loy b'hal pligi, if this were not the case, b'mai mukma plutai, how you have like no other option of setting up the machlokes. If we were dealing with, let's say, schach resting directly on the tree, everyone would agree that that is forbidden. That wouldn't be a source of controversy. So it must be that the schach is placed on the konim that are serving as the walls, and that would make this into a machlokas concerning tzdodim. So then, Rabos din becomes a machlokas tanoim. Reading this line again, from the beginning of the line, my laf, behol kumiflig, in the Gemara, the more sovar tzdodim asurin, the more sovar mutorin, omar abaye, loy. The kuli alma tzdodim asurin. As far as Abaye is concerned, Rabos din is something that all Tanoim, all these Tanoim at least, would negate, and that Stodim would not be allowed. The Hocha Betside Stodim Ko Mifligi. Here, and this is a level of detail that we deliberately did not speak about earlier, we were saving it for this. When you look at the case of the walls attached to the sides of a tree and the schach placed on the walls and my use of the schach, it technically speaking is not a case of tzdodim. It's a case of one generation removed. It's tzidei tzdodim. The use of the schach is to be classified as tzidei tzdodim, the sides of the sides in a literal fashion, and not the sides directly. More sovar, tzidei tzdodim asurim. Maybe we weren't clear enough, but we'll say it again at the expense of sounding repetitious. A wall is attached to the tree. So the wall itself, the wall of the sukkah that's attached to the tree, that wall is tzidei ilon. The schach is placed on the wall. Now, I, in placing my vessels on the schach, I am not benefiting directly from the wall. I'm benefiting from the schach that's supporting my pots. and the schach is resting on the wall. So the schach is tzidei tzdodim, being that the wall is tzdodim, it's attached to the tree, and the schach is resting on the wall. The schach is tzidei tzdodim, and this is the point of machlokis that the Tanakhama holds. That's the first more sava that tzidei tzdodim asurim. Or more sava, Rabbi Meir holds tzidei tzdodim mutarim, that tzidei tzdodim is allowed. Rava Omar. And as we go on in the Gemara, we see more deos of Amoroyim on this general topic. Rova Omar, manda osar b'tzdodin, he who would forbid tzdodin, osur nami b'tzidei tzdodin, would osur that as well. Uman manda shori b'tzidei tzdodin. Now Rova, here you see a major machlokis, where Rava says that if someone were going to allow tzidei tzdodin, Shori nami b'tzdodin, he would allow tzdodin. So in contrast to Abaye that said kulei alma tzdodin asurin, Rava is saying that an opinion would allow tzdodin, namely he who allows tzidei tzdodin would allow tzdodin as well. That would be a bit of, let's say, a bit of light for Rabba. Let's not confuse Rava with Rabba. Rava here is affording Rabba with a point of salvation vis-a-vis having Tanaic support. According to Abaye, Rabba would be left out in the cold, because according to Abaye, Kulei Alma, all the Tanoim would have told you Tzdodim is Osir. According to Rava, there is a chance, so to speak, in the form of the Tana that says Tzidei Tzdodim are Mutar. That would be, for example, Rebbe Meir, who said that you can enter a sukkah even though that involves resting your pots on the schach, albeit that's Tzidei Tzdodim, but he would allow Tzdodim also, and that would be good for Rava. Eisvei Rav Misharshia le Rava. Now, Rav Misharshia presents a problem for Rava. This question lasts a number of lines, so looking at our long question marking that you see, where you see the kuf that's encircled to the side of the Gemara, you'll notice this continues till the sixth line from the top of kuf nun hey omed aleph. So let's see Rav Misharshia's question on Rava. We have a Tanaic source, Noatz Yosein Be'ilon V'tola Ba Kalkola. A person nailed in a yosed, a peg. We're at the top line of Kuf Nun Hei Omed Aleph. A peg, or a spike, or a peg into the side of a tree, and then V'tola Ba Kalkola, and then suspended from this yosed, from this spike, he suspended from it a basket. This source, before we go on, we must introduce it. This source comes from the realm of Eruvin, and specifically an Eruv Tchumen. An Eruv Tchumen is a situation where a person wants to establish his Shabbos location. And from the point that he establishes his Shabbos location, he'll be entitled to walk a distance of 2,000 amos in all directions. How do you establish your Shabbos location? Well, obviously, if you're at home in a city, so your house is your Shabbos location. And not only your house, but the entire city is viewed as your Dalet Amos. Let's say you want to establish your Shabbos location for some reason out in the fields, out somewhere in a forest. In order to do that, you have to place food. A certain amount of food, as is dictated in the Mishnayos in Maseches Erevin, you place that amount of food at that particular location, and that becomes your Shabbos location, your Mokum Shvisa. In order for an Eruv to be effective, the Eruv is this food that represents your Shabbos location. In order for it to be effective as being Kainish Shvisa, you have to have accessibility. You have to have access to the food on Shabbos. there is a concept of, or a problem, you can say, hu b'mokom echad ve'eruvu b'mokom acher, where you're in one location and your eruv is in another location, that would be a problem. So, with that background in mind, especially the point of you're having access to the food, we have this person who attached a basket which contains the food, attached to a peg that's nailed into the side of a tree. The basket in question has a diameter of 4 tefachim. L'malo me'asara tefachim, if the basket is suspended at a height of more than 10 tefachim, ein eruvo eruv. The eruv will be ineffective in establishing his Shabbos location. The reason for that is that having a width, the basket having a width of 4 tefachim and being suspended above 10 tefachim, it's considered a reshus ayochid. He, the person in question, isn't, he's kind of shvis on the ground. The ground is a public area. We'll call that a reshus harabim. If he were to try to access his food, he would be taking it then from the basket, having a definition of reshus hayochid, to where he is on the floor, on the ground, which is in the reshus harabim, and you cannot take something from a reshus hayochid to reshus harabim on Shabbos. However, lamata me'asora tvochim eruve eruv. If the basket, which is attached to or suspended from the peg, which is in the tree, then his eruv is effective. Now, we've established an effective eruv. The Gemara points out the details and emphasizes then in this total picture why is the eruv effective? Taima denotes yose be'ilon. It's the reason that it's mutter, that it's a kosher eruv tchumin, is because he set it up. He took all the precautions, namely he nailed a peg into the side of a tree, and then attached or suspended the basket from the peg. The basket represents Sidei Tzedim. Let's go over this point again. The peg is wedged into the tree. So the peg, the Yosein, is Tzedim. The basket, in turn, is attached to the peg, making the basket Sidei Tzedim. Oh, so that's why the Eruv is good. We can infer, ha lo noatz, had he not put the peg in place, but rather, let us say, tied the basket directly to the tree, making the basket stodin, stodi ilon, afilu lamata me'asor tvochem ein eruvo eruv. Then, even if the basket were within 10 tvochem of the ground, the eruv would not be good, because he has no access to it, because in order to gain access he would have to be taking the bread or the food from the basket, and he's not allowed to do that because it is studded. So now, we don't forget, we are in the middle of a long question. This is Rav Misharshia's question. He's attacking Rava. What do we see over here? The Hohai Tana, this Tana that we that featured the basket with his eruv in it, the Hohai Tana, the Ka'osar Bitstodin, here is an example of a Tana that forbids Stodin. In other words, the basket without the peg would have been Osir. The Koshari Bitside Stodin, and he is allowing the case of the basket attached to the peg, which is Side Stodin. So there is a split, namely, for prohibition of Stodin and permission for Side Stodin. According to Rava, though, if someone allows Sidei Tzedim, he would allow Tzedim as well. Omar Rav Papa. Here, Rav Papa enters to defend Rava, in order to deflect this question. Hocha, the case of the tree with the peg, with the Yoseid, the reason that he needs the Yoseid here is not to convert the Kalkola into Tzidei Tzedim. Not whatsoever. Hocha bekalkola dechuko askinon. Here we're talking about a very narrow basket. It has a very narrow opening to it. And in order to get the food out of the basket, you have to do a lot of moving and shaking and squeezing your hand into it. And if there would be no peg, you know what would happen? If you would have to tie, let's say, if you tied this narrow opening basket to a tree, and with this very narrow, again, this narrow opening to it, the Bahadi de Shokile Le'eruv, as he's trying to take the Eruv, which is the food, out of the basket, Kamonid Lei Le'ilon, the Komishamesh Le'ilon Gufei, he's going to end up shaking the tree. And that is a violation of using the tree directly. And it's only because of that that we need the peg, that by having the basket suspended from the peg, so even though you're going to be doing all kinds of movements, the tree won't shake, because the basket is attached to the peg. But if not, if you had a wide basket, a basket with a wide opening, there, according to this approach, there would have been no problem with having the basket attached directly to the tree, the basket being, in that case, Tzide Ilon, and Tzide Ilon would have been Mutter. All of this, we're saying, sort of to keep things in perspective vis-a-vis the original Shita that opened this Sukkah, that of Rabba. We now continue in the Gemara, where the Gemara issues rulings on the topic. Ve'ilchasot stodim, asurim sidet stodim mutarim. Here the Gemara takes a stand and says that stodim is asur. This ruling would then seem to run, be a psak, unlike Rabba, so be it. But sidet stodim is mutar. And this approach also, this psak, then would be counter to what Rava was attempting to show as well. Rava wanted to say, at least as far as opinions are concerned, that if you hold regarding whatever you hold regarding one, you will hold regarding the other. Here you see a split, that stodim are also, but that tzidei stodim are mutter. Omar Rav Ashi, hashto di amris stodim asurim. Rav Ashi gets down to very practical terms, giving us an example. Now that we've established that stodim are asur, hai darga de madla. A darga is a ladder. A ladder that is madla literally means something that is high up. But Rashi describes a type of, say, we'll call it a booth that's on stilts, that's positioned right next to a tree. This booth that's on stilts is accessed by climbing a ladder. That's the Darga de Madla that the Gemara is referring to. So, once again, imagine a tree. Right next to the tree is a booth that's on stilts. Rav Ashi says, Lo limche inish adikla. One should not place the ladder, lean the ladder, on the tree. Dehava lehu tzdodim. Use of a ladder leaning against a tree is then a case of tzdodim. And we just ruled that tzdodim asurim. Elo limche agavzoi lebar midikla. But rather, gavzoi are pegs that one would nail into the tree and then lean the ladder on the pegs, making the ladder tzide stodim. V'chi solik, and then when you are go up, lo linich kare agavzoi, one should be careful not to place his foot on the pegs, elo lins lisnach akonin, but rather he should place his foot on the rungs of the ladder. And by keeping this in mind, so you see that we're avoiding the use of the tzodin and allowing the use of the tzidei tzodin. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.